You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to an emergency episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the wild card weekend winner, Seattle Seahawks.
Let's go!
It doesn't quite have the same ring to it yet as Super Bowl 48 champions, but we are riding high in the wake of the Seattle Seahawks for the second time in the 2019 season, going to Philadelphia and emerging victorious by a 17-9 final margin.
A very different game than the last one, yes. in a lot of ways. But the Seahawks still finding a way to win and advance.
Nobody wins a one-possession game like the Seattle Seahawks of 2019.
On the road.
Yes, especially on the road.
This one was full of a lot of big plays in a way that the previous game wasn't. It got a little bit, I don't want to say
big
dull.
Offensive plays. The other one was full of big plays. They were just all made by the
all
defense.
All on the defense. This game, it lulled for a second in the second half, similar to Patriots and
the Titans.
Titans last night, where it was 14-13 going into the half, and you're saying to yourself, there are going to be a lot more points scored here in the second half. It gets to 17-9. Every single person on Twitter tweets that the previous score was 17-9, and you think to yourself, maybe that'll stay the score.
It sure did.
And somehow, some way, it did stay the score. But even within that time period, not that many points being scored, monster plays, especially on offense, especially for Seattle, and especially by rookie DK Metcalf.
He's the story of this game. I mean, part of the story of the game is that after the loss at Dallas last year and their attempt to run throughout that game unsuccessfully against the Cowboys defense, like, look, they were in more than we wanted them to today. But Brian Schottenheimer, Pete Carroll, they let Russ cook. And Russ cooked. And you know what his best ingredient was today? As good as Tyler Lockett was? It was a healthy dose of DK Metcalf.
I mean, when you look at some of these rushing numbers, like if I would have told you going into this game that the Seahawks, and maybe you would have thought this was a positive because the quantity is fairly low, 11 carries for 12 yards for Travis Homer and 6 for 7 for Marshawn Lynch.
The important thing is that 12 of those yards for Travis Homer came on one play, which means his other 10 yard rushes went for no gain.
I mean, 5 of those yards for Marshawn Lynch came on one play. So that means he had one carry for 2 yards beyond that.
Well, you know, or 5 carries for 2 yards beyond that.
Yes, 5 carries for 2 yards beyond that. So this was the game, but they didn't just force it the entire time. The Seahawks at some point realized, and especially not when it was first and 20, realized that, hey, we're not going to be able to run the ball against this Eagles front. And they did let Russ cook just enough.
Yes.
They could have done it a little bit more, but they gave Russ just enough room to cook, and that's what he did in this game. I mean, DK Metcalf is the story of the game, yes, but Russell Wilson, as always, played a damn near perfect game.
So this was the third most yards that Russell Wilson has passed for in a playoff game at 325. It was the most yards he has ever passed for in a victory in the playoffs.
That makes sense. I figure the Falcons game he passed for more.
The Falcons game he had 385.
And probably the Panthers game.
Panthers game threw 366, although he threw 48 times in that one, which may have been a factor in that. He was not cooking quite that much today.
But so the unique thing about it was this was a Seahawks game that they were leading for most of the game, that they didn't force Russ to hand the ball off every single play. They let him get to 325 yards, but whereas in those previous two games, the Seahawks were down for a lot of the game. Big deficits that they had to overcome. This one, they had an arm's length lead the entire time. Has Pete Carroll learned?
I mean,
is he evolving?
Ask me next week. I have a long way left to go in this season.
They might have to let Russ cook even more. Going into next week, you have to say to yourself, there's positives and negatives to take away from this game, but you have to say to yourself, at least they didn't run the ball 50 times for 60 yards in this game.
I mean, even had they lost, obviously there were things we would have looked back on as frustrating, that series where, you know, they ran first and second down and went 3 and out and took almost, you know, took some time off the clock, but really didn't threaten the Philadelphia defense at all. But again,
there was a first and 20 run.
Over the totality of the game, like, it was a good game plan. It was generally tailored to the Philadelphia defense. We saw them get creative at times. The play action fake to Marshawn coming out of the backfield was an awesome play call.
Yes.
I think the big difference between this and what we've seen maybe a lot of the season, and then particularly that first Philly game, is the deep shots were effective in this game, and largely because most of them were to DK, other than the Tyler Lockett reviewed catch along the sidelines.
Oh, so frustrating that didn't turn into points. But yes, getting the ball out both quickly and down the field.
Oh, and David Moore. Did I not mention David Moore?
Oh, David Moore. So good. But also Russell Wilson running the ball.
Yes.
So I thought the line in general, they couldn't block the run at all.
Well, they couldn't block Fletcher Cox.
They couldn't block anybody in the run game. But okay. Passing did shockingly well. This was, looked like a pretty solid pass-blocking unit in general. I mean, like, Russ had to do some maneuvering at times, but there are other times where it's like, wow, Russ has some real time here, and then managed to create lanes where he was able to run through. I mean, seeing a spy against Russell Wilson is something I don't remember seeing almost any time over the last 2-3 seasons.
I think teams have done it at times with a linebacker. For the Eagles to bring Malcolm Jenkins out of his safety position to do it was unusual, and reflects that, you know, oftentimes Russell Wilson can outrun a linebacker if you keep him in that spot, which is one reason teams don't choose often to spy him.
But I mean, these things are not unrelated, though. The two stats that matter the most in this game are Russell Wilson, 9 carries for 45 yards, DK Metcalf, 7 receptions for 160 yards. And those two things are not unrelated.
And what we saw was playoff Russ in some ways, where, you know, oftentimes we're waiting for the fourth quarter of a close game, because that's when Russ is going to cut it loose and start running more often. He was doing that from early in this game. He had the 22-yard run on their opening drive, I believe. Or their second drive.
Yeah, I don't think
they were 3 and out on the opening drive after the Lockett incompletion.
But it also wasn't like Russell Wilson was trying to run in the past. He just looked faster today. The holes were that much bigger, and maybe this is because we saw him against the 49ers defense, and this Eagles defense ain't the 49ers defense.
It is not.
So maybe he just doesn't look as fast as against them. There are other times this season where Russ didn't look that fast, and today he looked downright spry! Like, this was first, second season Russell Wilson out there, right?
Oh, Dead Russ, goals in 2020. Gonna turn it back, turn back the clock a little bit.
There we go. He's lost the gut a little bit. He's been working out these first 4 days of 2020.
The other thing is, you know, with a depleted wide receiver core, not having to go deep into that a whole bunch, we saw 4 targets for David Moore. We saw 4 targets for Jacob Hollister. That's probably the right amount of targets for those kind of players. And then you saw a combined 17 targets for DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. It was Lockett early that they were really feeding. You had the big plays to Metcalf. And then the second half, it was Metcalf that really took over this game. You have nothing to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what we talked about in the preview. It was this Eagles defense, and the secondary in particular, is not what it was when the Seahawks previously faced each other. And you could see it in the numbers. Russell Wilson didn't pass for 325 yards in that game.
He had 20.
20.
200. dropped the decimal point there when I was...
So this secondary just was not the same, and we'd kind of seen it. Like, people talk about this 4-game win streak, and I just feel like we really nailed it with... This Eagles team is not that different than the team that we faced 5 weeks ago.
They might have been different. I mean, we have gotten kind of far into this podcast without talking about one of the biggest storylines of the game.
The reason that we haven't brought it up is because it didn't matter that much.
We thought the Seahawks were going to win this game on defense. Instead, they won it much more on offense, even though the score was as low scoring as it
was. We thought they were going to win this game on offense going into the game, and they still won it on defense, but...
No, I don't think they did. I mean, the defense...
The score was 17-9.
The defense was great in the red zone in particular, but early in the game was quite strong. But when Josh McCown came in at quarterback for Carson Wentz, who after... I can't figure out exactly what descriptions various NFL media had of his 4-game stretch to end the season that came against 2 games against the Giants.
Brilliant.
One against the Washington professional football team, and one against the
He figured it all out in impassioned speeches, all the same bullshit, like a movie ending, right? It was a film ending to get those 4 wins against Washington and the Giants twice.
And that 1 game against the Cowboys.
And the 1 game against the team who fired their coach mid-game today.
It's true. But we didn't get to see whether that was going to hold up for Wentz. It obviously didn't over the couple of drives he did play, but because of the fact that he took a late hit from Jadeveon Clowney that was uncalled for a flag and absolutely should have been, and unfortunately suffered a head injury. I don't believe they officially announced it as a concussion when he was ruled out for the game, but presumably that is what, you know, he suffered and, you know, why he was unable to return to the game. And so we saw Josh McCown at age 40, having, you know, retired before this season, come in to play a playoff game. And it was not quite the Nick Foles dominance that we've seen from the Eagles in past playoff runs with Carson Wentz on the sidelines. But McCown was still pretty good. I mean, he completed 18 of 24 passes. He was
Wentz-like.
Their game plan, yeah, it was largely what we expected, which is a lot of short stuff, a lot of working to the tight ends and running backs, 7 catches for Dallas Goedert. Zach Ertz, their second leading receiver with 44 yards, even though he only caught 2 passes. And their wide receivers, only 2 of them caught passes in this game, Greg Ward Jr. and Deontay Burnett, and they combined for 4 catches for 29 yards.
Let me just tell you something here. Maybe you call this the West Coast offense or whatever. When they talked about Josh McCown coming into the game, Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels were talking about how Josh McCown had sold Carson Wentz on the checkdown. And it's like, you sold him on losing football is what you did, Josh McCown.
You sold him on something that works against the Giants and the Washington professional football team and against the Cowboys.
Let me just tell you, though, like, you look at this game and you're like, 18 of 24. Hey, that's pretty good, right? 174 yards. Okay, that's not quite as good. And then you look at the team stats and you say yards per play, 4.6 yards per play. And that is not winning football. Although the Eagles,
I mean, a lot of that was Wentz's 1 for 4 for 3 yards with a 1 yard sack.
I mean, not that much of it. And this doesn't include penalties. 6
yards
also
per pass on Carson Wentz's 5 dropbacks.
But this also doesn't include the penalties, which are a huge part of this. You know, like the biggest yardage that they gained in the second half, and
I think that was the only time they took a deep shot was on the pass interference by Trey Flowers.
There was the other pass interference on the other side.
Was that a deep shot?
Yeah, there are 2 pass interferences. Right. And there were 2 big plays that were pass interferences. Those were the times. And granted, those worked. But like counting on a pass interference in these plays is not something that you can do. This is not winning football. Checking down is not winning football. Throwing the ball down the damn field and letting Russ cook is winning football.
This sounds a lot like a Pete Carroll philosophy of offense. But what Carroll's philosophy...
It is not a Pete Carroll philosophy of offense.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was it someone else who was calling for them to go to the quick passing game? Do you think that those are deep shots?
You have to have a combination of both.
Sure. I think a lot of what happened in this game is...
This is the same Eagles offense that we played. We played a very different Seahawks offense, and the game played out quite differently because the turnovers weren't as big of a factor. But the Eagles offense didn't change from the last time we saw them.
Except they didn't turn the ball over 5 times. That did change.
I mean, this time they ended up getting sacked quite a few times, but they came closer to scoring a lot of times.
Yeah, and that's what I'm going to say here, which is that Pete Carroll's defensive philosophy of taking away the big play, I do think it is a sound, generally sound defensive philosophy, even though if you could take it too far when you're playing against the Bengals and
when you give up big plays because you have Tedrick Thompson in your secondary.
Well, that's a good point as well. But so one thing that happens is you don't have to play as conservatively once you're in the red zone because there are no big plays to give up at that point, and it becomes much more difficult for a dink and dunk offense to move the ball at that point. And I think that's what we saw, is that repeatedly Eagles drives moved the ball well between the 20s, but stalled out once they got, you know, closer to scoring, and that resulted in the 3 field goals they kicked and also the 4th downs they went for and were unable to convert in this game. And that's what ultimately decided this game. I mean, had the Eagles picked up one of those 4th downs, who knows? It may have been a different outcome.
I mean, how many more field goals would they have had to hit? Like, I don't know if it would have made that big of a difference. That was a situation where I was saying to you, on the 4th and 4 that they went for early, right, around 5 minutes or so left. And it felt like it was probably a wise decision to go for it, but because they would have needed another touchdown later. But it was the type of thing where it's like, you know, when you're a fan and you see the opponents going for a 4th down, most of the time you're like, ah, shit, right?
Yes.
You're like, you want them to kick.
Like if San Francisco had gone for that 4th and 2 at the end of the game last week.
Oh, man, I would have puked.
Would have been awkward for the people around you in the stands.
But this was the type of situation where it was like, A, this is still 4 yards and it's not that easy to pick up. But B, even if they get this 4th down, we know that they're not getting a big play on this 4th and 4.
I don't know. Miles Sanders might have had a big play if he got
that was the one where it was like, ooh, boy. But even after that, it was like, we can still stop them here. This is not a guaranteed touchdown.
Sure.
So I think that the defense, once they took an 8-point lead, it meant a lot of field goals. And that's why the touchdown to DK Metcalf was so huge, and that they extended this lead past field goals.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about individually on the defense. Jadeveon Clowney, even though he didn't end up with a big stat line, had just one sack, two tackles for a loss. Even aside from the late hit on Wentz, he made a huge impact throughout this game with his ability, his get off on the, and his ability to get into the Eagles' backfield repeatedly.
And we'll see what Clowney does next week, because I think he's facing a much better offensive line. But Clowney, when he is right, when everything is going well for Jadeveon Clowney, he is a world destroyer.
Yeah, I mean,
he messes up everything that you're trying to do.
Probably his biggest play was the tackle on Greg Ward on an end around. That was something we feared that the Eagles were going to have a lot of success against, but didn't really come to pass, that they were able to get.
Kind of incredible how the Seahawks just learn how to defend these plays to the edge. And I'll tell you why. It's because the Eagles didn't use misdirection when doing it.
I think that's an element. I think also they were just much more concerned about that because they didn't think that the Eagles could beat them straight up, and that was probably the correct philosophy to take in this game. Cody Barton getting the start here for the injured Michael Kendricks had a pretty solid day, I think.
Yeah.
Bradley McDougald was very involved throughout. His ability to play up near the line of scrimmage with Quandre Diggs back there, also a factor in the Seahawks taking away big plays, as you implied earlier when talking about Tedrick Thompson. Obviously, he isn't the alternative at this point, but him back there instead of Lano Hill changes the way the Seahawks are able to play defensively and makes them a much stronger defense, as we all anticipated.
And Ugo Amadi coming up with two big third down plays, making stops on third down. I think the dime package where you have Blair Amadi on the field, like, it's a much better dime package than it was before.
It puts a lot of quickness and speed out there on the field in a way that the Seahawks base defense does not necessarily do.
Yes. It felt like defensively, like they made some good decisions. KJ Wright also just cleaning everything up.
Yep.
And on those edges, like, KJ Wright is so good in those situations.
Yep. What else do we have to say about this game? It feels like a kind of straightforward game compared to a lot of these post-game pods. Partially because we probably just don't have as much to complain about.
Yeah, I can complain about some things.
I mean, that makes it much easier. Like, that Cardinals game, we had a lot to get to.
The most thrilling play, I mean, DK took the attention at the end, but to close the first half with maybe the best play that the Seahawks have had all season, to end that first half and go into halftime in a situation where you're at the 5-yard line after kind of going back and forth, you're saying to yourself, please no field goals, right?
Yes.
It's just like, dear God, no field goals.
Well, especially for the Seahawks to have dominated the way that they had the entire first half. Play as well as they had offensively, and before that drive have 3 points to show for it, in part because of the fact that they had a Jason Myers field goal blocked early in the game, and because then they had struggled in the red zone much the same way as the Eagles did all day. So they needed to come away with that from that drive with points. They get the huge play. That was the David Moore play,
correct?
I think
this was the last play that they had in the red zone all game. Am I right about that? Because all the other scores were from outside of the red zone.
Well, they only had one other touchdown, so yeah. So, no, they had a touch. Yeah. Yeah. The DK was the only other touchdown. So, yes.
Being at the 5, going back and forth, they finally get their situation to get Marshawn on the field after the roughing the passer call against Russ. They bring Marshawn out, give it to him. It's like, okay, there's a nice burst, but the beast is going. And it's like, break it, Marshawn. And then takes it to the house after beasting through tacklers. Like, that play was incredible.
You're still fired up about that. You're still ready to go out there and run through a wall yourself.
I mean, that play, it defined, like, Marshawn didn't do a lot in this game because no running back did a lot in this game. You can't even really, like, him and Travis Homer basically did an equal amount of nothing in this game, right? But it was like Marshawn.
He each had one positive run. That was his.
Made a huge play there. And then just seeing Marshawn go down the field, like, it's still exciting. No matter what, when he catches that pass down the field, the two times where it's like Malcolm Jenkins is trying to tackle him, it's like Marshawn Lynch will be the only one to tackle himself on the edges. And then when he catches the pass, it's like he's not going down. He's pushing you down. You need to get Marshawn in the middle of the field with like 5 guys on him to tackle him.
I mean, here's the thought. It's now 9 years since the Beast Quake. And Marshawn Lynch got another touchdown in the playoffs for the Seattle Seahawks.
That's oh my God.
But that whole drive, I mean, there was
just a toast to Marshawn Lynch coming back and still looking like a beast on that play.
So before the 2-minute warning, they're 3rd and 4 at their own 24 on that drive. The Eagles are thinking about getting the ball back and potentially being able to take the lead going into halftime and then have the ball first. And DK Metcalf flashes across the field. There was, you know, kind of a sort of unintentional pick play where Jacob Hollister...
unintentional.
That's officially, it's unintentional. Unintentional, intentional. Let's go with that. Where Jacob Hollister did a nice job, as he did later in the game, of not making contact with Metcalf's defender, frees Metcalf. He goes for 26 yards. And then it's still not guaranteed they're going to score points because back-to-back incompletions, they went deep on those first two passes, weren't able to come up with him. 3rd and 10 at the 43 with 1:36 left. And that's when David Moore coming back to the ball to catch it there.
Such a good play.
And you're like, just get the first down. And then he keeps running because of the fact that there's no one around him and gets all the way down to the Philadelphia 5, a 38-yard pickup in that situation set up the touchdown eventually.
There were so many exciting third down plays. And also, can we just run the offense with deep plays and then these sort of pick plays? Like, if Jacob Hollister can run a play where he doesn't make contact, but it still functions as a pick, why is that not the offense? Belichick would run that over and over and over again if he still had Jacob Hollister.
The Seahawks' third down efficiency ended up, like, it was good but not great, but 8 of 15 on the game. But they started, I believe, 2 of 6, and then they were pretty slow in the fourth quarter when they were mostly trying to run clock. And in between there was a stretch where they picked up, I think, like 5 or 6 third downs in a row and fueled these long scoring drives. We should definitely talk about the final third down play, though.
I mean, this is the type of situation where we're not fearing for our lives in the same sort of way. So the Seahawks have the ball at the 20 or so?
No, they were at their own 11.
At the 11.
They had been pinned relatively deep after that fourth down failure by the Eagles.
First down, second down, runs for nothing, basically. They pulled the Seahawks.
They had netted out 0 yards between them.
The Eagles have a timeout left, a bit of a decision to make for the Seahawks, but you still have to say to yourself, let's just end this right now. Like, the Seahawks have had so many exciting plays on third down in this game. You know that Russell Wilson is your best player. Why leave it to the defense?
The one timeout is not valuable enough in that situation to risk not taking a chance at picking up the first down and just ending the game at that point. So the Eagles, who hadn't blitzed a ton in this game, Chris Collinsworth did a good job of pointing out that a lot of their blitzes were that Malcolm Jenkins, when he wasn't spying Russell Wilson, as he wasn't most of the game, would line up off opposite Jacob Hollister, and when Hollister stayed in to block, would just then rush the quarterback at that point.
But you should never leave Hollister in a block then.
It didn't seem like a particularly great idea at that point, because you were counting on him blocking someone else, and then that left Jenkins unblocked. They hadn't blitzed a ton in this game, decided to come with an all-out cover zero blitz. And you don't cover zero blitz Russell Wilson. He's the best at beating those because he will just loft it up and throw a ball that takes forever to come down. And the Seahawks wide receiver will beat you downfield. For many years, that was Doug Baldwin, who was amazing for this as the cover zero blitz. For a while, it was Tyler Lockett. But now we have a new cover zero blitz hero. And that man's name is DK Metcalf. I should have had his initials pulled up there.
DeKalen?
Yeah.
DK Metcalf is incredible.
By the way, there was nothing decaf about this performance. It was fully caffeinated.
Just that play that he goes up and gets, the speed that DK Metcalf gets down the field with on the touchdown that he scored. I mean, having the wherewithal, like that ball, it looked like Russell Wilson was overthrowing everybody on that pass. He got it out so quickly. You want to talk about your quick passing game? Like Russ with that play, with the motion on the play of the pass to the touchdown to Metcalf, and then lofting it up, DK reaching out and getting it. He's tall and he's fast and he's physical. This is incredible.
What we've been waiting for?
It is an incredible combination of size and speed and skill.
He was the 9th receiver drafted this year. I mean, right? There were some good receivers ahead of him, including A.J. Brown, his teammate at Ole Miss, but oh boy.
And the Seahawks still drafted L.J. Collier before him. But
no, that's not true. They drafted DK in the first round, and they drafted Collier in the 3rd.
7th. undrafted free agent. to be able to do that as a receiver, like, this is a unique set of skills that he has, and it was on full display here against the Eagles and helped the Seahawks win this game. Give him an inch of space, and DK Metcalf is going to go up and make a play.
Anything else on this game? Should we talk about next week?
Well, I think that this game was an aperitif.
That's definitely the first time the word aperitif has been used on the Pelton cast.
This was the first round of a long-term fight, and we wanted the Niners, right? We didn't mind playing the Niners for a third time.
It would have been a good rubber match. It would have been probably pretty good weather for Russ cooking.
By the way, do you want to go look up weather in Green Bay right now?
I have seen some. There were some tweets about it during the game. it's not going to snow. Or at least the preliminary forecast is not for snow.
When the Vikings went into New Orleans and took out the Saints in a game that they were 8-point underdogs in, you had to say to yourself, let's play an NFC Championship game at home. Let's bring another one back to Seattle.
I mean, you and Baby Fantasy Genius were rooting hard for the Minnesota Vikings in this game. I was a little more mixed about it because I don't relish the possibility of playing a playoff game at Green Bay. Lambeau Field has been a house of horrors for the Seahawks in the postseason, dating back to we want the ball and we're going to score.
Has Russell Wilson played a game at Lambeau Field? No, he has not. A playoff
game. He's played a lot of games at Lambeau Field. They haven't gotten super great either.
Has he played a playoff game at Lambeau Field?
He has not. I also think that, by the way, the forecast is mostly cloudy, 31 degrees, high of 31, low of 28. So it's going to be freaking cold, but there does not appear to be a lot of precipitation.
Time too? This is basically prime time for the Seahawks. It is like 3:40 p.m. on Sunday.
Okay.
This is Seahawks time. Like,
it is Seahawks time. It's also just on the road is Seahawks time. They're now 8-1 on the road this season.
But they're on their schedule in a way that the Packers aren't quite as much.
So one thing we should talk about, we talked about this on last week's emergency pod and then a little bit the weekly pod. How much is home field going to matter in the playoffs after a regular season where there was no home field at all? And you're typically going to see less of an advantage to the home teams on wild card weekend than the divisional round weekend, both because of the fact that, you know, those teams are playing on equal rest, and then because you have situations like this where the Seahawks won two more games than Philadelphia in the regular season. We can debate whether they were actually two games better, but are the road team because of the way that division winners are guaranteed a home game. You don't get that same setup in wild card round. But still, as I tweeted from Cape Helden, the collective score this weekend, the road team's 82, the home team's 64. They went 3-1. That one loss came in overtime, along with, of course, one of the wins by the Minnesota Vikings in New Orleans. So if you were looking for evidence that home field does still matter in the playoffs, you didn't find it this weekend.
Wow.
That's all you had.
Have we seen Russell Wilson against the Packers in Green Bay since Aaron Rodgers got bad?
I think some of those games were during the period where Aaron Rodgers was not statistically an elite quarterback. I mean, I think that's the other thing that's a fitting part of this game is, look, the way that third Pelton brother Ben Baldwin has been trolling Aaron Rodgers fans online.
The only quarterback who would have been better was if they were playing Andrew Luck in this game.
If only we were waiting in the Super Bowl. The inevitable outcome of this was that the Seahawks were going to have to play Green Bay and that Aaron Rodgers would throw for about 500 yards on the Seahawks secondary. I'm pretty sure is the inevitable outcome of all this trolling.
Or
right?
Not. Or not. Or he gets proven right in a huge moment.
And this one's for all the cheese, I guess.
For all the tweets.
Oh, there we go. That's even better. For all the snark. It's going to be an interesting matchup.
Oh, I'm so excited.
And the Seahawks should be healthier for this one. Mike Iupati did not play, ended up getting scratched on Saturday. Jerron Brown seems like there's a pretty good shot that he'll be back. There was a chance that he would play until he was finally ruled out. I think that was Sunday morning that Jerron Brown was ruled out.
Brown.
A little more receiver depth, yes. And then Dwayne Brown is obviously going to be the big player to watch all week long as he comes back from knee surgery that Pete Carroll said, you know, aggressively 2 weeks, and we'll be 2 weeks out from it at that point. Or we already are 2 weeks out. So
I mean, as far as we know, aside from Ziggy Ansah, no other injuries that came out of this game. I'm going to knock on wood when I say that. The defense didn't look amazing against the Eagles. But at the same time, they did end up with 7 sacks against the Eagles. And if they can pressure Aaron Rodgers, they could potentially have some luck here. They could have a chance.
Bob Condotta tweets, other than Ansah, Carroll says no other apparent significant injuries.
DVOA-wise, just preliminarily speaking, where do the Packers rank?
Not great.
This moment.
Even though they did have a better point differential than the Seahawks, they DVOA-wise were not exceptionally strong. And I think behind the Seahawks, yes, they finished the regular season 10th in DVOA, 2 spots behind the Seahawks.
And one spot ahead of the Philadelphia Eagles.
That is correct, yes. The Packers not as banged up and have the good fortune of a bye week where they were able to rest the players. It's interesting, the last time we saw them, like if you go back 2 weeks, they were dominating a Minnesota team that, you know, I think that caused a lot of people to doubt the Vikings going into the playoffs, and it did not ultimately matter in that matchup for them against the Saints. But then the last time we saw the Packers, they were struggling to beat David Blau in Detroit to clinch a bye.
I mean, they are just, we'll talk about them a lot more on this week's regular pod, but they are a strange team.
They are a strange team.
Like, just getting destroyed by the 49ers, beaten by the Raiders on the road, and then also having some monster victories, too. It really feels like they just kind of beat up on the NFC North in a lot of ways.
You know who else is a strange team, though?
Who is that?
It's the Seattle Seahawks.
Totally normal team. Played a normal Seahawks game today. Didn't it feel like that?
It was a relatively normal game. There was no turnovers on either side. There were a lot of fumbles, but they were all recovered by the offense. Really an inauspicious start to the day when Travis Homer fumbles on the first snap. But yeah, the weirdness was probably just in terms of the big plays that they had to DK Metcalf and David Moore and Tyler Lockett.
This is just like, it was just week 18. Just another Seahawks game on the schedule. We've already done this. We've been there.
I mean, the other thing that you have to say about the Seahawks is, I mentioned this when we were talking or on a recent pod, like you should never take this for granted, but they have made it somewhat routine to win a playoff game. Russell Wilson has been the Seahawks quarterback for 8 seasons. This is now the 6th of those 8 seasons they have won at least one playoff game.
Wow.
Which is pretty incredible.
So last year and then the year that they missed the playoffs?
Yeah, the previous 2 seasons.
Wow.
Were the 2 misses in that span.
All right.
So.
Well, on to the Packers.
On to the Packers. And thank you for listening.
Thanks.